Hello and welcome to CICK News. CICK News is your local and regional news coverage provided by me, Pamela Hassan, and Dan Messick for Smithers Community Radio. This news program is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada, and our aim is to provide local coverage on stories that affect the lives of Northerners like you. Today I'm continuing Death in the Valley, a short series about preparing for, getting informed about, and accessing care for end of life in the Bulkley Valley. In the first part of this series, I spoke to Catherine Johnson about when and why to prepare your will. You can find that on smithersradio.com. Today, I'm speaking to Jackie Wagner, a Vanderhoof death doula, about her experience with death as a rite of passage for anyone in need of the services of a death doula. Over time, there have been many different names for people who accompany people's end-of-life journey. End-of-life doula, dying guide, soul midwife are a few. But whatever you call them, the connecting thread throughout their vocation is empowering people at the end of life in choice of medical treatments, dying, and funeral options. As an actual job title, this seems sort of newish. It grew in popularity in the 70s. As end-of-life awareness grew, this led to more non-medical advocates to support families and to help them get what they need. But then, people have been acting as guides through the process of death to their loved ones and community members for much, much longer. So today, I'm speaking to Jackie in Vanderhoof from her home office as she guides us through the process of preparing someone and their family for death.
My name's Jackie Wagner. I am the owner of destinysdoor.ca. I am an end-of-life doula, and I handle from diagnosis to after-death care.
Can you describe what is a death doula and a role for people who would seek out your work?
In the simplest terms is I'm a concierge to the dying. So when you think about it, you go to a hotel and you go to the concierge and whatever you ask for, they provide, right? Whether it's concert tickets or how do I get to here or restaurant, that's exactly what an end-of-life doula does for the dying. We speak about at the time of death, who they want there, who they don't want there, if they like music, if they want to be read to, if there's religion involved, if they want prayers, spiritual support, I'm there to help them through the last final step of their next journey. And my job is to make it peaceful, safe, and loving. And that's basically what I do. And then there's the loved ones too. So when you've got someone who's been going through the dying process is very much like a birth, right? Because just like in birth, you go through labor and there's delivery, and same with death, there's a laboring, and then your body, your soul passes. I have things like I have a death doula bag. So I have this bag over here and it's full of anything and everything you can possibly think of. I have resources for books to cover the 11th hour, dealing with illnesses, the long term, and going through all of the emotions and the processes.
What is the history of death doulas, and also why did you choose to become one?
Well, death doulas, they've always been around. So it's only been probably in the last 60, 70 years where we've kind of lost our skills. If you look into ancient times and you look into our history, you'll find Egypt, Tibet, India, all of those places are very much in tune with, they would call them soul midwives. And throughout history, you will see them. It's only in the last 60, 70 years and into the Middle Ages that we've lost those skills, especially here in the Western side of the country. And that's been lost because we've very much turned dying into a medical event. It went from a personal, a loving part of that rite of passage for children with their parents, etc., to a hospital event where we're now seeing people dying alone and not having good deaths. Everybody deserves to have a good death. And that is very, very important to me. And that's why I don't care about where or how, or like I said, I'm not there to judge. And I don't care what religion. I personally have no religious beliefs at all. But that doesn't affect what I do, because it's not about religion. It's not about me saying one religion is wrong or one religion is right. Everybody's path is different. And every experience I have with every person is different. And I had one gentleman, he shared things that, he was a pastor, so he had lived his whole life and did all of his whatever he needed to do right by God. And it at the end of the day, he had said that I spoke to him and he had never said things to me that he had never said to anyone in his entire life. And I had only met him that day. And for me, what it brought, how it I got to that point, my journey probably started, well, for seriously started 11 years ago, but death has always been around me. I'd started with pets. I had pets that I'd put down and I'd stayed with them and went through the emotions and everything that comes along with that. 11 years ago, I went through the journey with my mother. She was 58 years old when she passed. She had spent an unprecedented amount of time in hospice. Hospice is normally maybe a month at most. She was in hospice for 101 days, which she had small cell aggressive lung cancer that spread very rapidly and quickly. And one of the commitments I'd made to my mother after I had gone through most of the process was that when I found my way and healed, that I would find a way to do this, to fill in a gap. I recognized right away, even back then, 11 years ago, that there was a gap in our medical, our care aides, our nurses, our doctors, all of them do amazing, amazing jobs, and they really don't have the time to do what they really want. Most of them do want that time to sit and to explain to people things like the death rattle or what to expect as their loved one progresses through death. Those are things that I come in with. So I am actually an added bonus to hospice, to the death team. I'm not there to take anything away from anybody. I don't claim to be a care provider. I don't claim to be a doctor. I do not direct anybody. I am there as support and to make sure that the person who is dying, if their wishes are being supported. When I moved up to Prince George, I started at the hospice there and really spent a good solid year devoting myself to the hospice. I was a transplant, wasn't working, so it was perfect. I had all the time, so I said, use me up. And there I had the beautiful experiences. I had guests pass with me. And it's not always the same. It's not always the end result that I'm sitting there when they pass. They may not want to. Not everybody does want someone there, or they're really adamant on who they want there. My position is just to help them get to wherever they need to get to. It's not a failure on my part if they don't pass with me. It's at the end of the day, it's on their terms. Society had started to fear death doulas because people think, if I talk about death, then I'm going to die. First of all, you are going to die. That's something we all can't escape. And just because we talk about dying doesn't mean we're going to die tomorrow. We all talk about winning the lottery. Does it happen right away? Nope. Having a conversation lightens it. It makes it easier to talk about and to be able to ask those questions, the easier and open the conversation is. So to understand that someone is going through that and losing every piece of themselves, right? Because they're losing control of everything. They can't hold on to anything. And that is a powerful thing to understand.
What is the role of a death doula, or what's been your experience maybe with people who they want to use MAIT, medical assistance in dying? Would a death
Okay.
doula typically, like, are you brought into a lot of those kind of situations?
So a lot of doctors don't know I'm out there. I'm still getting my name out there. And yes, I can provide support. Someone going through MAIT still has to go through all the death process. That doesn't change, right? They still have to make sure they have their powers of attorney, their wills. It's good to have your advanced care. And advanced care planning needs to be understood is different from power of attorney and all of those things. This is specifically for your end of life care. Someone who has power of attorney isn't necessarily has to be that person. And there's some great resources out there. The province of British Columbia, My Voice is something to look at. And Yeah, and that gives you from A to Z of things to do. It gives you things to write down between your wills, all of those things to direct you. I also have workbooks that I use. Something as simple as I'm dead now. And it's just like a workbook that I can give to them. And it's little things like my wishes, passwords, email accounts, like all of those little things you don't think of. Insurance information, financial properties. What else am I flipping through? Important documents, important things to say, letters that you want to write to people. I have so many different resources for ceremonies. Those are things that are important that people want rituals. Rituals are very important too. And you don't think about the rituals. A rite of passage, an ezzutune, they need to tell their life story in some way or form, whether it's verbally, through pictures, through video, through letter. Those are the things that it's part of the dying process and part of them being able to move on, is that they need to know their legacy is being carried on.
Something that I'm curious about as well is, are there resources for people who can't actually afford to have a death doula, but this would be something that they think would be of assistance to someone who they know is nearing end of life? But if money and budget really is that barrier, how can they feel most prepared for a loved one who's reaching end of life?
I would say hospice. Hospice is something I work very closely with. The Vanderhoof Hospice here, I work very closely with them, and that's how you get me for free. So in some hospice, it depends, because there's still a lot of pushback from some hospices. I know that there's some hospices I can't get into right now because they feel that there's a threat. They really don't understand that I'm not there. I don't take away beds. I don't take away funding. I am just an added bonus for the end of life care part. Like I said, I can sit with that person. I have that time. I can spend 2 hours and sit by their bed, or 4 hours, 6 hours, whatever's needed. But hospice also provides all of that information. Hospice will provide also for things that you need. Like I have lawyer referrals. I have all of those things if anybody needs them. And like I said, I'm not grief support. However, I can still support. For the most part, I would say for me personally, of course I need to pay the mortgage. I need to pay for life. So, there is a cost to it, and the cost is not, it's not cheap. But when people are thinking about death and think about how hard that journey is, to realize that I'm taking that journey unconditionally, and that there is a toll on myself too. Right, going through each death, because as they leave me, I still carry them, and I will carry them along with me for the rest of my life. If someone contacted me and they said, "Look, Jackie, I really need your services. I really, my mom needs your services," whatever, I would never turn anyone down, because I would never want anyone to. That's my whole point of doing this. I'm not about to be a millionaire. I'm not about to break the bank. I just want to make sure people have good deaths, and no one should have to die alone if they choose not to. So, it's like my rate is expensive, but I'm also a sliding scale. If that's not what you can do, what can you do? Let's work something out. And that's why I work so closely with the hospice. I'm very much a go-to for her. The coordinator will give me a call and, "Jackie, are you up to this? And this is what I have." And I've dealt with elderly. I've dealt with from the point of where they're within minutes of passing and me coming in and they pass with me, to I've had 3 or 4 months before, because it's a terminal illness, to just a couple hours. I had one where I was there for 10 minutes, but I was there, said what I did, what I do, because I do, I have I intuitively know what to say and what to do, and I'm really good at feeling the room, reading people. That's a really important thing. And for me, it's a, I can't explain it, I just know. It is. I know when there's other presence in the room. I know when they leave. It's the energy I feel. I'm very much connected. And for me, there's no fear. And I think that's part of what I bring into that room, is I'm not afraid. So bringing that calmness. And I think that's that energy that I transfer on to people, is that relief of peace and safeness, and you know, to know that someone really is there just for them.
Yeah.
You know, and that's important too, to be there just for them. And separating it as an end of life doula, it can be challenging at times, because you do have to, when you go into someone, you need to be there for them. It's at no point is any of that visit, any of that time about me. Not a second of it. It is all about the people I'm around, and specifically the dying person. Secondary, their loved ones, which I've long since given up saying family, because family, yeah, it's loved ones. Family comes in so many different boxes. You know, I want to make sure that they're okay and they're getting through their days and
yeah,
and stuff. And for myself, I have to do the same thing when I go to see a client. You know, my bubble, like we all have to have a bubble. We have to have a way of releasing. For myself, my bubble is my vehicle. So when I get to the place, I sit for a second, I compose myself, I focus. As soon as that vehicle gets shut off, boom, I'm in hospice mode. I'm in end of life mode. When I get back into my vehicle again, that's where I do my little ritual of, you know, listening to some music on the way, defusing myself. When I get home, my journey's ended with that specific person.
My last question is, what would be something unexpected or something that you find surprises people about you or what you provide, or maybe even something that you have in your bag that people are like, what's that doing there? You know what I mean? What I guess would be something that people find surprising?
I think for me, it's that energy. They find it surprising about that they don't realize that death is, it's something that, I don't know, they think it's so more, and it there really is, it's not. It's a rite of passage. I have that positivity that I make death not so scary. And I think they're surprised at the end of it that I do bring this sense of calm, and that I'm able to address things that they didn't even realize. You know, you think about how death shapes a person. You know, society has really beat down on us and taught us to fear it, to run from it, when we really should be embracing it. It's something we know. Everybody knows it's going to happen to you. So why not do it the way you want to?
Yeah.
Go out with a bang, or go, you know, like enjoying it to the fullest. And those final days, that's where you wish anything and everything. And that's why I give anything and everything without a second thought. Hospitals can be pretty cold, and even hospices, a lot of them are quite beautiful, but it's still, it doesn't have that quite that home feel. And there's so many things people don't know. You don't have to die in hospital. You don't have to die in hospice. You can die at home. There's very easy things to do to allow this. The biggest problem right now with at-home ones that people are finding is finding the resources. Mm-hmm. So the LPNs and the care aides that need to be there. And that just goes to our medical shortage, our the ongoing problem that we're seeing. And that's why me stepping in and end of life doulas, it takes a little bit of the off of the professionals, the medical professionals, and I come to hold their hand. I don't come to take anything away. Yeah. You know, I help with those questions that the family members don't understand. Little things like going in when I first meet someone, the first thing I bring them in is a notebook and a pen. That notebook and a pen is to write down anything they think of, anything they want to talk to their doctors about, anything their family, anything they wish they want brought in. And that sounds so simple, something so little that you wouldn't think of it, but yeah, it's quite profound to have.
Yeah.
You know, and those are those little gifts that I have, that those little things that you don't realize that I have. Am I doula bag?
Jackie, was there anything that I didn't ask about that you think is important for people to know about what you do, you know, your services or yourself?
Well, I think for my services, I'm here. Give me a call. Send me a text. I'm open. I want people to have good deaths. And that's why I'm very clear on, if you can't afford me, get me through hospice, and I have no problem saying that I work with hospice because, like I said, it's about what I do, not what I make.
Okay, so I found you by actually just Googling death doulas. I think death doulas Bulkley Valley or something like that. But what's the best way for people to find you, contact and contact you?
I have a few ways. There's my website, which is www.destinysdoor.ca. There you can send me a message. There's my phone number on there. I'm also on Instagram, Destiny's Door, and also on Facebook too. The number on there is a cell phone number, and I'm available all the time. And that's the thing. Like even here at the Manor and stuff, they know I'm available 24 hours a day. Timing of deaths, you don't get to say, okay, you're going to die at 6 o'clock tonight. That's the way it's going to go, right? So, it's that availability and that I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. And even if it's just questions, give me a call. I'm more than happy to answer them.
Great. Well, thank you so much for doing this interview. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. It was very exciting. It was fun to do.
Thanks again for tuning in to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at skeenastrong.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks again to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters. I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.